thank you everyone for joining us today for It Takes a Village, a Gaggle podcast. Today, we're going to dive into an education topic with an industry leader that we're really looking forward to. We're excited to share with you this conversation with an amazing woman who is bringing to us a message of hope. So today we are joined by Angela Myers. Angela is an author, speaker, educator, and all-around education thought leader. So I want to thank you so much, Angela, for being with us today. Like I said, I've really been looking forward to this conversation. I've recently gotten to know you, and every time we interact, I learn something new and you inspire me. And so I'm just hoping this podcast today will do the same for all of our listeners.
I feel exactly the same way. I'm so excited about getting to know you, about the work that Gaggle's doing, about moving forward this conversation that I hope isn't just inspiring, but that it helps us reflect on what matters most, because I think that's what the pandemic has revealed in all of its essence. It has revealed the vulnerability of our humanity, of what it takes to not only survive, but thrive. It's helped us clarify what matters most. And I think that is actually a gift that we might not have stopped and thought about at the level we're thinking about it if the pandemic hadn't been a part of our lives. We didn't request it.
Yeah, exactly. We had
to learn from it.
I think it's a very positive thing to be thinking, what is it that we can get out of this that isn't all negative, right? Like, yeah. Let's talk about something on the other side of the spectrum. And so, just to get us started, why don't you just tell us a little bit about who you are and where you come from and your whole concept of mattering, just to get started, and then we can kind of dig in a little bit more, okay?
Yeah. I have been an educator for 33 years, possibly 34. I started when I was 12. And I started my career, I actually was a medical school dropout. And to put myself through college, I worked 4 jobs, all with kids. And it's when I truly knew what passion was, like the thought of not teaching. I mean, I was good at science and math, and I was fascinated by medicine, specifically the brain, but it didn't light my heart on fire. If you asked me to stop teaching, it'd be like asking me to not breathe. So starting my career in education, I started with 5-year-olds, and they are the most hopeful human beings on the face of the earth. Their insight into not only their own capabilities, but their insight, their humility, their empathy, their pure awe in everything the world is. When you're in that bubble around 5-year-olds all the time, you think everyone sees the world in the way they see the world through their eyes. And as I moved up the grade levels, like, because I've taught kindergarten through university, I started seeing that passion and that joy and that hope disappear. And it founded like my study into why do we start operating and showing up different in the world? And when is it that we start losing hope for what the world can be instead of just operating with whatever it is? And it starts fairly early. It starts second, third grade. We start doubting ourselves. And that's where the idea and message of mattering became so fundamental to not only my teaching, but my life. When people don't feel like they matter, when they don't feel seen, when they don't feel heard, these are elements of not only learning, they're conditions of being human. We don't just desire to be seen, to be heard, to be valued, to understand that we're essential to another. We deserve it. It's an essential need. It is as critical as food, water, shelter, and air. And when we don't get those conditions met, we show up different to the world. And when we show up different to the world, then the world starts shaping us versus us shaping it. And that's something that we can prevent very explicitly if we just ensure that every person every day feels like they matter. And it sounds so simplistic, but it's incredibly complex. And the repercussions of not knowing or not feeling like we matter is hopelessness and helplessness mm-hmm. and everything that comes with that. And we know the spectrum and the opposite end of what happens when a human being, let alone a community of human beings, feel hopeless and helpless.
Right, exactly. And I mean, you touch on right there at the end of the hopelessness and helplessness. I mean, the opposite of that is hopefulness yeah. and hope. And I know that that is a major part of your message about mattering is focusing on hope. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about that, you know, what it is, why it matters, and how yeah. to practice it.
First of all, in clarification, it's easier to understand what hope is not. We use it so casually. I just used it casually. I mean, even me who studies it, I used it casually. Like, I hope this happens. I hope I see you tomorrow. Hope you make it next week. But hope isn't this fleeting feeling. It's not something we have. It is something we do. It is a verb. It is an action. It is a daily disciplined choice to remind ourselves that no matter what the day holds, this outside force we call the world, that we have the power within, because hope is an inside force, to make it better because we resolve to act and make it so. It isn't something that we promise to one another openly. It is something that we model, that we practice, that we embody, and doing that openly. And it's everything from our thoughts, our mindset, to the words. Like, we just shared a conversation with one of my now new favorite human beings, Quentin Shepherd. And he went through, just think about the simple words that we're using around education, learning loss, learning loss. So if we spread that in our community, oh my gosh, there's a panic around learning loss. What if we looked at it as learning leaps and we celebrated the innovations that educators every day in their classroom are moving forward, not because they were mandated or told to do, because that's what they do. They innovate every day. They adjust, they show up, they pivot. So what if we looked at the leaps that we've made as not only teachers and learners, but as human beings? So that's just a switch of one word, learning loss versus learning leaps. But one produces a very hopeless and helpless scenario. And we buy into that because our thoughts become our actions become our behaviors become our character, become the essence of how we operate. But that one shift in word, learning leaps, oh my gosh, that makes me, even just saying it, like, look at all the things that I'm getting goosebumps. Like, look at all the things that teachers are doing different, that kids are doing different, that leaders are doing different. Look at all the things we discovered that we never would have discovered. Look at the way that we have reframed. Yeah, maybe it was ignited by something that we didn't choose to jump off of, like a pandemic, but we have certainly taken amazing leaps. I think our profession is being tested right now. Humanity is being tested by now. And not only is the foundation of the history of our work based on hopefulness and what the future could bring because of education, that our future is dependent on it. And so if we start being the profession of hopelessness and helplessness, that we just can't help the circumstance we're in, we're just gotta, it starts as simple with our mindset, and then our discussions and what we talk about, what we focus on expands.
Right. And, you know, you touched a little bit on this whole idea of, you know, this past year during the pandemic, I feel like a lot of people are sort of focusing, like I was saying at the beginning, on the negative, but in terms of education,
yeah,
you know, we talk about all the difficulties that have everybody's been having to face, which are real and important. But what about the things that have, it's like been a disruption, but it's pushing us forward in a positive way. And you know, I've heard people talking about moving forward, actually, Dr. Shepherd.
Yes.
Concept, yet again. Forward.
Yes, yes.
The concept of moving forward as opposed to moving on. You know, what is your take on, like, you know, it's been a year, education's been through the ringer, students, teachers, everyone, but we've moved the needle in some really great ways, which are some of the things you've just talked about. So
think about just that word. So when you think of moving forward and you think about thinking forward and not thinking back, it changes everything. It means that forward is our choice. Forward is a choice. It isn't just an action. We have a choice to stay exactly where we're at. We have a choice to go backwards, or we have a choice to go forward. So even when I've been like catching myself saying the words, let's get back to normal. Well, normal wasn't perfect. There's a lot of things about normal that were revealed. You and I have talked extensively. You guys have, it isn't just because of the pandemic that kids articulated in their day-to-day talk, which is what you do, monitoring patterns in language and ideations towards feeling isolated, feeling lonely. Feeling lonely didn't just pop up because of the pandemic. Feeling invisible, feeling isolated, feeling like they didn't care or that they didn't matter or weren't seen. Those were pandemic levels before the pandemic. They were invisible. And what I have loved about the future is that we are not seeing, in education, we call it SEL. In the world, we call it being alive, living. We are not taking people's emotions for granted. And we are making the connection that has been made for 30 years between emotion and cognition, and not seeing SEL or however we categorize it in the word of the day as an extra thing, as a nicety. So these forward conversations give me hope. The reframing of the essentialness and indispensability of a teacher in the life of a student has been re-emerged, if you will. And if we move forward, putting the teacher at the center of the classroom, the element that most influences how a child not only will love that subject, but will love learning, because only a teacher can look into a child's eyes and say, I see you. I'm so proud of you. It was amazing what you attempted today. I know that you stumbled, but I'm so proud of you for taking that risk. A computer cannot do that. We cannot be outsourced. We cannot be fearful of technology's evolution if we stand firm to the foundation of our humanity, which is recognizing that every single person has value, is valuable. And the way that they show up in the world, whether it's on Zoom or whether it's in front of the classroom as normal, depends on how much they believe that, how much they believe those two words, I matter, mm-hmm. I matter. So it brings me great, because hope is our superpower. Hope is the thing that we got to hang on to with all of our might. And no matter what the outside forces try to do, we can't let anyone take that away from us. We can't. Right. So
absolutely. That's so important. You know, thinking about everything you're saying in terms of like, and I've heard you talk about some of these practical ideas of how to put this into practice. And I remember once you saying something about a noticing notebook.
Yeah. So
talk about that a little bit.
Again, 5-year-olds changing my life, the most hopeful human beings in the world. And I want to say, like, this is my deep neuroscientific background that created this, you know, profound framework, but it wasn't. I was an exhausted first year kindergarten teacher with 26 kids. And they, you know, if I don't know the last time that our community has been actually in the presence of 20 or 35 year olds, but it's exhausting. because five-year-olds demand that their essential needs are met. If they have to go to the bathroom, it doesn't matter if it's the middle of science class. They will be like, Mrs. Myers, I gotta go pee right now. And then they do it. And then they go and you're like, okay, if they don't think that you're noticing something about them, they will literally plant themselves in front of you, hang onto your leg and drag you into the classroom because you didn't notice that their barrette was on the left side of their hair. And yesterday it was on the right side and you failed to notice those bangs today. And so it's exhausting when human beings demand what they deserve in their humanity when it's times 25. So every day they would do something amazing like, Mrs. Myers, look at this, look at what I did, look at what so-and-so did. And so I totally remember this moment. I brought my little rocking chair. I got them to our circle thing. I sat down and I said, okay, you guys, here's the deal. I am exhausted. You are so beyond awesome. Every day I am in awe of you, but I cannot keep up. So I made us a schedule for your genius. On Monday, you five, you can be awesome. And I promise you, I will notice every single one of you. On Tuesday, you five, you are awesome today. And I will notice you on Wednesday. And I literally made a noticing schedule. And so on Monday, I took 1 minute each, which is 5 minutes out of my day. And I spent just being present for that. So let's say it was Jonathan. So on Monday, I picked a minute in the day and I gave myself an uninterrupted minute to just witness Jonathan. And I kept a notebook because I've always kept a notebook and I wrote down what I valued about what I saw, what was beautiful and precious and unique about him. And what happens is a lot of times when we plan one-on-one time with kids, our job isn't just to be present. Our job is to coach them, to correct them, to comfort them, to do all those other things we do as teachers. The problem with that is if that's the only time we're present, then they start thinking, I'm not enough. Because what we're saying in essence is you will matter. You will be valuable if you finish this paragraph without these three mistakes. You will be valuable if you correct this and reconvene and do it XYZ. You are valuable if and when and only. And it isn't that we intentionally send that message, but we are very rarely just simply present to witness the brilliance in one another. And to note that is something that I call a lasting compliment. Because every kid, of course, if I say, you know what, can you repeat that? Can you repeat that, Paget? That was amazing. And I'm writing it down. I've got my pen. I'm scribbling it down. What is the first instinctual thing? I don't care if you're five or you're bigger than five and you run a CEO company of 500 million people. What do you want to see?
You want to see that you remembered.
Yep. And you want to know exactly what you noticed about me.
Yeah.
What you write down in your notebook, right?
Right.
And so what started happening, because this was just a tool of personal management for me. So I could keep my energy around these 26, you know, completely energetic human beings, is they started honoring that and being patient with me that I was going to notice them. I was going to recognize them and I was going to put something in my notebook. So what happened if you did something on Wednesday, but you were the Friday girl and you were supposed to be awesome till Friday, they started taking like collective responsibility. Mrs. Myers, Paget did something amazing. And I know she's not until Friday. So I'm going to just go jot that down in the noticing notebook. So I just kept it open on my desk and we started celebrating one another. And I thought, this is the most beautiful thing in the world. And it's so simple. And I just randomly picked five kids because that's how I divided the class. And I thought, I can give 5 minutes to this. I can, because if you thought about like, I'm going to say something or send something or recognize something good, then I cannot do it for 30 minutes a day. And if I don't plan it, 5 minutes slips away. It slips away. So it was just a scheduling thing. But this is a practice that I have kept near and dear and committed to, disciplined to in my life for 33 years. So every day, not perfectly and not always five people, But there has not been a day, unless I've been like super sick, that hasn't passed that I have not specifically reached out to someone in my world and paused and took note of what I noticed about them and sent it to them. And the profound impact on not only them, but more importantly on me, it has made me a more alive learner, a more awake, empathetic, compassionate, gracious, grateful human being, as a parent, as a partner, as a, just as a human. And so I've kept that practice, my noticing notebook. And it is like, it's just the most beautiful practice. I don't know what my life would be like without it. And on the days I feel the darkest, I work the hardest on that. And it, there's just not enough that I can say, even if you pick one person a day or one person a week for Pete's sakes, and you don't have to say, I'm going to devote a minute, devote 15 seconds to thinking why Padgett matters to me. And then push yourself that extra moment and say, does she know that? Because one of the disconnects in the research is there was a research study that I shared yesterday, and it was done in 2019. I think it was Carnegie Mellon, but don't quote me on that. And basically they're asking kids, do they feel valued in school? And 49% in 2018 or 2019, and it was a big sample size, like 28,000 kids said, I don't feel valued. I don't feel valued. And yet if they would have done a simultaneous study that said, ask their parents, ask their teachers, ask their school administrator, ask the superintendent of the school, ask a school board member, does Padgett matter? Every one of them would have said, of course they do. Of course my child matters. Of course my kids matter. Of course I love them. Of course I think they're amazing. So there is a huge disconnect between our assumptions that people know we matter and why, and our actions. And that is where our superpower lies. It is in that gap that hope exists, not only for them, but for us. And I think I see hope as a duty, a moral obligation as a teacher, because that's not only what keeps me hopeful, it keeps kids in that space that they need to be in.
Right. Yeah. You know, and over the past year, a lot of interactions between educators and their students has been virtual. Now that's shifting.
Yep.
Thankfully, kids are getting back into schools, but there are probably a lot of situations where virtual learning was going to continue as part of the norm.
Yeah.
How would you accomplish this sort of practice that you're describing?
Absolutely.
In a virtual environment?
So I run this space that I hold for educators on Clubhouse. You cannot see them, but that doesn't mean that you don't have the power to create the conditions for everyone to be seen. So I don't know if you remember Romper Room, where they look through this screen like, I see you. So on Clubhouse, you only get like a small pop-up when someone enters the virtual room, and you get to see like a very small picture. When everyone comes in my room, I tell them I see them. I welcome them one at a time. I use their names. I comment about them. I continually use their names. So these are simple common sense practices. But when I ask people what they value most about this room or community, because we don't talk about a specific strategy or a topic every day, we celebrate our humanity. And I've made it very explicit about the conditions. So in Clubhouse specifically, the people on the top of the application are called on the stage, and they have the microphone. So I changed my stage to a curvy, comfy purple velvet couch. And I actually put a picture up. I said, you're just coming up to the couch and sitting with me. There's no hierarchy here. There's not the bottom third, because Clubhouse sort of puts like, who are the moderators that have like the power in that room? And then it's that same hierarchy in school, who's at the front of the room. And our mantra is, it is not the person at the front of the room that is the smartest. The room, the smartest person in the room is the room. But only if the people in the room feel valued and feel seen and feel like their contribution is not only equal, but necessary and needed. So it is extra critical that you prioritize that humanity trumps content, that connection comes before content. So it doesn't matter if they're coming into a Zoom. I will come in like we did this on our Zoom call. I think we had 2,000 people, but we all came in 15 minutes early and we're chatting with people in the chat room. I'm saying their names. It is great to have you here. I see you. Where are you from? Thank you for coming. You came all the way from there. Is it cold there? So our humanity leads. And often that's not the case, not just in virtual, but in our classroom. If you think about the language and you think about what that looks like through a child's journey, they could literally go through a whole day, a whole week, even a whole quarter without ever hearing their names. Good morning, boys and girls. It's math class. Today in math, we're doing this 48 minutes later. Good morning, boys and girls. It's science. Let's get to this. Open your book to this. Good morning, boys and girls, unless you did something that is less desirable. So seeing someone else, using their name, giving them, whether it's emotional eye contact or it is actual physical eye contact, is not just a nicety. So we have to plan for that. As much as we plan for our session is going to be 5 minutes and this is the order of it and this is the content and the objectives we're going to cover, you have to actually put in our lesson plans humanity, time for humanity. And the most important moments to do that are the first 2 to 20 seconds of an interaction and the last 2 to 20 seconds of an interaction. And the middle actually doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. How you greet people and how you leave people defines the experience for them and for you.
That's and right.
You can control that.
Yeah, that's, I'd never thought of it that way. That's very interesting. You mentioned briefly Clubhouse. I know that's a platform that you use, you're very much involved in, and I recently joined.
Yeah.
It is really cool. And do you want to talk a little bit about how, you know, what is the room that you have there and what it represents?
Yeah. So Clubhouse is a newly launched, not by new, I mean, in the last year, it launched during the pandemic, and it is what we call a social audio app. It is audio only. The interface of it is deliberately simple. So all the things that we are used to that distract our time, our energy, that define our behaviors on social, whether it is a back channel or it is video or it is even emojis or all the things that we can vote on, click on, write on, blah, blah, blah. It took all that away. So the only two actions you can do in Clubhouse is listen and leave. You can listen and leave. I'm sorry, listen, leave, and speak. Sorry, so speak. So you vote with your heart, actually, not just with your feet. You can drop into any room. You can listen to anything. You can comment on it. You can raise your hand. And if you don't like it, you can leave. And it is so simple that actually irritates people. Like every week we meet with the founders and they're like, but I want to chat. And we forgot this art. It's stripping away everything that takes away or has potential to dehumanize us, like numbers of followers and check marks. And if you can dance in front of a TikTok video, if you can do something cute for 30 minutes, and it brings us back to our foundation as human beings, listening to one another, learning from one another, speaking, sharing our voice, sharing our perspective, sharing our hearts together. And it becomes this really beautiful, vulnerable space. Now, of course, people are trying to sell you stuff on it and, you know, it's, you know, brands are going to get involved, but at least right now it's a reminder of those human conditions. People need to be seen, to be heard, to be valued and have a chance to contribute, to show that they have something that the world needs. So I hold a space every day for educators, my curvy purple couch, and we're messing with times, but it's under Clubhouse EDU is what it is, or you can just find me and search my name. And then I run a whole bunch of other rooms, but that room is specifically special to me because the only agenda is celebrating, supporting, and advancing our humanity. There's no topics, there's no strategies, whatever someone wants to share, whatever somebody wants to celebrate, if they need help, if they have a question, it is not only a safe space, but a brave space. I'm really proud of it.
As you should be. I've listened in, I haven't talked, but I will be brave and do that in the future. I encourage educators and anyone listening to this podcast to go to Clubhouse and go to what's the name of your room again?
You find me on Clubhouse. And if
you find Andrew Myers.
Yeah. Okay. In my bio. And there, I made a quick start guide for educators because there are, even though it's an app that's pretty low in terms of onboarding, there's still some it's different than any other app that we're used to because it doesn't have all those bells and whistles. So little things like if you do come up to speak, your mic is live. Like that's just a little tip. And so people don't realize, and they've got all this like stuff running in the background and dogs barking, and they don't realize when they come up on stage, your mic is absolutely live immediately. Yep. And you have to mute it. So there's like logistical things, like what you want to, like one of the big things, like I'm not an Instagram person. It's not at all me, but in order to communicate on Clubhouse, you have to have Instagram. So I did not have any Instagram. So I only opened an Instagram account 6 weeks ago, because that's the way people message you, because there's no messaging component on Clubhouse. So there's little things like that. You have to have an Instagram so that people can talk to you. They hear something amazing that you said, or they want to connect with you or learn more about you. That's the only way that you have it. So stuff like that. So there's a free guide. If you look at my profile it's on my website as well.
Well, we're coming to the end of our time. I wondered if there is anything that we haven't touched on, Angela, that you want to add.
Yeah, I have a challenge, because I think the most sustainable kind of hope is the kind of hope you spread. And so it doesn't, as I said, it doesn't have to be a big action. And that sustains hope, and it positions us as purveyors of it. So I created this site in partnership with Canva called mattergrams.com. So you can go to my website or just type in mattergrams.com, and you can send you can send a physical mattergram, but you can send a beautiful digital mattergram across all the platforms, because Canva helps with templates. Like if there's a different size of photo, if you post it on Instagram versus Facebook versus Twitter. And so Canva helped me create templates. And the other thing about spreading hope, being explicit about hope and mattering, is that it's not common language. It's not how we usually give a compliment. We give compliments very strategic at the surface about things like, I really liked your haircut, or that's a cute shirt. Getting to the deeper level of what I call a lasting compliment is a different syntax. And so to help you, I call it the language of mattering, the language of hope. We have populated some templates with some language stems that help you get out what I know you're feeling in your heart, but you might not have the words for. You certainly don't have to use any of these pre-selected stems, but they might trigger a way for you to articulate something specific to someone that you love and admire, but you just don't know off your tongue what those words could be. Or you can create your own. Canva is amazing and free. So mattergrams.com.
Okay. Yeah. So mattergrams.
Yeah.
Okay.
.com. Yeah. Like a telegram, but a mattergram.
Okay. That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much for sharing that and sharing your other ideas and everything that you're doing. I think it's so impactful. And there's so many things that people can just take away from this immediately and be thinking about. So Angela, I just want to thank you for joining us. And for our listeners out there, please join in on some other of our, we call this, It Takes a Village, our podcast series, because it really does, helping kids. And, listen to some of our other podcasts, and we'd love to have you. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And I'm so honored to be working with you, learning more from you. And if someone hasn't told you lately, you matter, Padgett, you matter. So thanks, everybody.
Thank
and
you
I'll see
so
you
much.
Online.
All right. Take care.